This is Audible.
Listening Library presents The River by Gary Paulson. Read for you by Peter Coyote.
A year has passed since Brian Robeson was rescued from a solitary wilderness adventure described in Hatchet. Having had a brush with death and learned to rely solely on his own ingenuity, Brian sees the world in a new light. He is also trying to forget the nightmarish aspects of his experiences. Brian opened the door and stood back. There were three men, all in dark suits, standing on the front porch. They were large, but not fat, well-built, with bodies in decent shape. One of them was slightly thinner than the other two. "Brian Robeson?" Brian nodded. "Yes." The thin man smiled and stepped forward and held out his hand. "I'm Derek Holzer. These other two are Bill Mannerly and Eric Ballard. Can we come in?" Brian held the door open to let them come in. "Mother isn't home right now." "It's you we want to see." Derek stopped just in the entryway, and the other two did the same. "Of course, we'll wish to speak to your mother and father as well, but we came to see you. Didn't you get a call about us?" Brian shook his head. "I don't think so. I mean, I know I didn't, but I don't think Mother did either. She would have said something." "How about your father?"
He doesn't live here. My parents are divorced."
"Oh, sorry." Derek truly looked embarrassed. "I didn't know." "It happens," Brian shrugged, but it was still new enough, just over a year and a half, to feel painful. He mentally pushed it away and had a sudden thought of his own foolishness. Three men he did not know were in the house. They did not look threatening, but you never knew. "What can I do for you?" "Well, if you don't know anything about any of this, maybe we should wait for your mother to come home. We can come back." Brian nodded. "Whatever you want. But you could tell me what it's about if you wanted to." "And maybe I'd better check on you first. Are you the Brian Robeson who survived alone in the Canadian woods for 2 months?"
54 days, Brian said. "Not quite 2 months. Yes, that's me."
"Good. Are you from the press?" For months after his return home, Brian had been followed by the press. Even after the television special, a camera crew went back with him to the lake and he showed them how he'd lived. They stayed after him. Newspapers, television, book publishers, they called him at home, followed him to school. It was hard to get away from them. One man even offered him money to put his face on a T-shirt, and a jeans company wanted to come out with a line of Brian Robeson's survival jeans. His mother had handled them all with the help through the mail of his father, and he had some money in an account for college, actually enough to complete college. But it had finally slowed down, and he didn't miss it. At first it had been exciting, but soon the thrill had worn off. He was famous. That wasn't too bad. But when they started following him with cameras and wanting to make movies of him and his life, it got a little crazy. He met a girl in school, Deborah McKenzie. They hit it off and went on a few dates, and pretty soon the press was bugging her as well, and that was too much. He started going out the back door, wearing sunglasses, meeting Deborah in out-of-the-way places and sliding down the hallways in school. He was only too glad when people stopped noticing him. And here they were again. "I mean, are you with television or anything?" Derek shook his head. "Nope, not even close. We're with a government survival school." "Instructors?" Derek shook his head. "Not exactly. Bill and Eric are instructors, but I'm a psychologist. We work with people who may need to survive in bad situations. You know, like downed pilots, astronauts, soldiers, how to live off the land and get out safely." "What do you want with me?" Derek smiled. "You can probably guess." Brian shook his head. "Well, to make it short, we want you to do it again." Brian stared at him. "It's a joke, right?" Derek shook his head. "Not at all. But I think we should wait for your mother to come home and talk to her and your father. We'll come back later." He turned to leave, and the other two men, still silent, followed him to the door. "Just a minute." Brian stopped them. "Maybe I didn't understand what you said. Let me get it straight. You want me to go back and do it over again? Live in the woods with nothing but a hatchet?" Derek nodded. "That's it." "But that's crazy. It was rough. I mean, I almost died, and it was just luck that I made it out." Derek shook his head. "No, not luck. You had something more going for you besides luck." Brian had a mental picture of the porcupine coming into his shelter in the dark, throwing the hatchet and hitting the rock embedded in the wall and getting sparks.
If the porcupine hadn't come in and he hadn't thrown the hatchet, and if the hatchet hadn't hit the rock just right, there wouldn't have been sparks, and he wouldn't have had a fire, and he might not be standing here talking to this man now. Most of it was luck. Let me explain what I mean. Brian waited. We teach what you did, or we try to. But the truth is, we have never done it, and we don't know anybody who has ever done it. Not for real. He shrugged his shoulders, moving under the jacket. Oh, we do silly little tests, you know, where we go out and pretend to survive. But nobody in our field has ever had to do it, where everything is on the line. He looked directly at Brian. Like you. The one named Bill Mannerly stepped forward. We want you to teach us. Not from a book, not from pamphlets or training films, but really teach us what it's like, so we can teach others more accurately. Brian smiled. He couldn't help it. You mean take a class out and show them what I did? Derek held up his hands and shook his head. No, not like that. Nothing phony. We haven't worked it all out yet. But we thought one of us would go with you and stay out there with you, live the way you live, watch you, learn. Learn. Take notebooks and make notes. Write everything down. We really want to know how you did it, all the parts of it. Brian believed him. His voice was soft and sincere, and his eyes were honest, but still Brian shook his head. It wasn't like you think. It wasn't a camping trip. I lost weight, but more than that, I didn't come back the same. And he thought, I'm still not the same. I'll never be the same. He could not walk through a park without watching the trees for game. Could not not hear things. Sometimes he wanted not to see, not to hear everything around him. Noise, colors, movement. But he couldn't blank them out. He saw, heard, smelled everything. That's what we want to know, those things. Derek smiled. Look, don't say no yet. Let us come back and talk to your mother, explain it all, and then you can make a decision, all right? Brian nodded slowly. All right. Just to talk, right? Just to talk. The three men left, and Brian looked at the digital clock on the table in the entryway. It would be an hour before his mother got home. He had some studying to do. It was the end of May, and there were finals, but he decided to cook dinner. He loved to cook. It was one of the things that had changed about him from the time when he was in the woods. He thought of it as the time. Just that, the time. When he was speaking quietly to Deborah about it, he tried to tell her of it, all of it, including the moments when he tried to end himself. When he spoke to her about it, he always started it with just those words, the time. A year had passed, and in the world around him, not much had changed. His mother still saw the man, though not as much, and Brian thought it might be passing, what they had between them. The divorce was still final and would probably remain so. He'd gone to visit his father after the time and found that he'd fallen in love with another woman and was going to marry her. Things ground on a day at a time, but Brian had changed completely. And one of the things that had happened was that now he loved to cook. There was something about the food, preparing the food, looking at the food. There was so much of it compared to what he'd had in the woods. He enjoyed taking the food out, working with it and cooking it and serving it and eating it, chewing each bite, knowing the food, watching other people eat. Sometimes he would just sit and watch his mother eat what he had cooked, and once it bothered her so much that she looked up at him, a piece of sautéed beef on a fork halfway to her mouth. "What is it?" "I'm just watching you eat," he'd said to her. "It's something, eating. Just to see somebody eat, it's really something." "Are you all right?" she'd asked. Of course he wasn't. Or maybe he was and had never been all right before in his life. But he'd smiled and nodded. "Sure, fine." But it was more that he couldn't tell her what was wrong, or even if anything was wrong. He couldn't really talk to anybody about it because nobody understood what he meant. His father and mother had insisted that he go to a counselor when he first came back, and more to humor them than anything else he went, but it didn't help. The counselor thought he was somehow mentally injured, somehow harmed, and the truth was almost the exact opposite. He tried to tell the counselor that he was more than he had been, not less, not just older, not just 15, when before he had been 14, but more, much more. But the counselor didn't understand. Couldn't understand because he hadn't been with Brian in the woods during the time. The time. "I discovered fire," Brian told the counselor. "Well, sure, but you're back now," Brian had stopped him. No, you don't understand. I truly discovered fire, the way some man or woman did it thousands and thousands of years ago. I discovered fire where it had been hidden in the rock for all of time, and it was there for me. It doesn't matter that we have matches or lighters or that fire is easy to make here in the other part of the world. I truly and honestly discovered fire. It was a great thing, a very great thing. The counselor had sat behind his desk and smiled and nodded and tried to know what Brian was speaking about, but it wasn't there. He couldn't. And that became the way of it for Brian. In all his dealings with the new world around him since he was reborn in the woods, as he thought of it, he had to be evasive, hold back. If he told the truth, nobody believed him. And if he was silent, which he found himself becoming more and more, they thought he was sick. He couldn't win. He took 2 pork chops out of the freezer and thawed them in the microwave. Then he found the cookbook and flipped to the page for breaded pork chops. When he first returned home, he found himself wanting to eat a great deal. He'd buy a hamburger, eat it, drink a malt, then think immediately of buying another one. But that only lasted a brief time. His stomach had shrunk, and the food made him feel heavy, wrong somehow, and he'd stopped overeating. But he still took great pleasure in food, and he now prepared the pork chops slowly, enjoying himself as he worked. He cut the fat off them, breaded them, preheated the oven, and put them in a glass pan. While they were baking, he looked at the clock again. His mother was due in less than half an hour, and she was never late. Put 2 potatoes on a plate to bake in the microwave. He would start them when she came home. They baked in a few minutes, and they could eat before the men came back. It was a wonderful meal, his mother said, leaning back from the table and smiling, as usual. Brian nodded. Something I whipped up. They cleared the table. They had become strangely closer since his return. So much of the divorce and the other man had bothered him, but coming close to death in the woods had led him to understand some things about himself and other people. He realized that he was not always right, was indeed often not right, and at the same time he found that others were not always wrong. He learned to accept things, his mother, the situation, his life, all of it, and with the acceptance he found that he admired her. She was trying to make a go of it alone, working in a real estate office, selling lots, and it was rough. We have to talk, he said, putting the dishes in the dishwasher. To have dishes, he thought. Just to have dishes and pots and pans and a stove to cook the food, it still marveled him. Some men are coming over to talk to you. What men? He explained, Derek and the other 2, what they wanted. You mean what they said they wanted? They might be anybody. We should call the police. He shrugged. If you want. I was a little worried at first, but they didn't do anything, and they seemed all right, so I told them to come back. She thought it over and finally nodded. Let's see if they come. We'll play it the way it looks best. As if on cue, the doorbell rang, and she went to the door with Brian following. Derek stood alone on the front step. He backed away so they could see him well through the peephole in the door. She opened the door. Hello, I'm Derek Holzer. My son told me about you. Weren't there 2 others? We thought one man might be less pushy. They stayed in the motel. Please come in. We'll have some coffee. Derek followed her in, and they sat down at the dining room table, and Derek explained to Brian's mother what he wanted, all that he had told Brian. We would control the operation closely, he said, and take every precaution possible. Of course, we wouldn't do anything without your permission and Brian's father's as well, Derek concluded. His mother sipped coffee and put the cup down carefully. Her voice was even, as if talking about the weather. I think it's insane. Brian half agreed with her. In all the time since his return, he had had dozens of kids and not a few adults say how much they would have liked to do it, be marooned in the woods with nothing but a hatchet. But they always said it when they weren't over a block and a half from a grocery store, usually in a room with lights and cushions on a couch and running water. None of them had ever said it while they were sitting in the dark, with mosquitoes plugging their nostrils or night sounds so loud around them they couldn't think. To want to go back was insane. Yet there was this small feeling, a tingle at the back of his neck as his hairs went up. I know it sounds strange, but Brian has had a unique experience, Derek said. He set his cup down carefully on the saucer. It could save lives if he would help us. It's still insane. Brian's mother shook her head. I don't think you have the slightest idea of what you're asking. You must realize that for the time Brian was gone, we thought he was dead. Dead. We were told by experts that he couldn't possibly still be alive, and then we got him back. Back from the dead. And now you're asking me, his mother, to send him back out there?
Derek took a breath, held it, let it out. Don't you see? That's exactly why we must do it. Because he was thought to be dead and lived. Because he did something nobody else could do. And if he could share that with us, show us, take us through it with him, he could save others who were in the same place. It's not just what he learned about survival. We know most of that, or at least the survival instructors do. It's his thinking, his psychological processes, how his mind worked for him. That's what's so important. I have to do it. God, Brian thought, was that my voice? Both of them looked at Brian, Derek in surprise, his mother with a stunned look on her face. What? Brian leaned back. I know, Mother, but he's right. I learned something there, about how to live. I mean, how to live. And if it could help others, I have to do it. There is money, Derek said. We can contract him, and the government will pay well for his help. His mother was still staring at him, but he knew, Brian knew, that she understood. There was much between them since he came back, much understanding. She treated him much more as an adult, and she understood. Still, she held back, and the worry was alive in her face. Are you sure? Absolutely certain? Brian sighed. I have to, if it'll help others. She nodded slowly, biting her lower lip. But she nodded. I'll have to call his father, she said. He may say no. But Brian knew. He was going. It was strangely easy for him to get in the bush plane. Brian had thought at one time that he would never get in a small plane again, and when he went to visit his father after the time, it had been hard to enter the plane. But now he clambered in and took the seat and back with a relaxed attitude. It all felt the same and yet different somehow. Derek got in the front and sat next to the pilot and turned to Brian. Are you uncomfortable flying? Brian shook his head. He looked out the window at his mother standing by the station wagon. They were at a different small airport, but it was the same station wagon with the phony brown wood sides. She waved when she saw him turn to look, and he waved and mouthed goodbye so she could see it. The pilot started the engine, and Brian jumped a little with the noise, but he settled back down at once. He still could not quite believe that he was doing it, felt as if he were half in a dream. It had been 2 weeks since Derek first came to him, and in that time they had made detailed plans. After Brian had further convinced his mother and worked on his father over the phone, Derek had come back with maps and plans, and they'd included Brian's mother in the whole process. Derek had decided he should be the one to go, even though he had little or no survival knowledge, because he was a psychologist, and that was the aspect they wished to learn about. They picked a lake in the middle of the wilderness, perhaps 100 miles east of the lake Brian had crashed into the first time. Brian's mother thought of using the same lake, but Derek vetoed it, because they wanted it all to be new to Brian. The lake was not named on the map, though it fed a river that went south and east until it disappeared off the map. We selected the lake carefully, Derek said, circling it with a felt-tipped pen while they sat in Brian's dining room. It has the same kind of terrain as the lake you crashed into, and roughly the same altitude and kind of forest. How far is it from help? Brian's mother asked. Derek smiled. We'll have a radio, and if any trouble develops, we can have a plane there in 3 or 4 hours. Please don't worry. But I do worry, that's just it. She did worry, Brian thought, watching her as the plane taxied out to the runway. She did worry. Again he watched her get smaller and smaller, and again he flinched with the noise of the engine throttling up, and again he was amazed at how easy the plane slid into the air and flew. And he was suddenly afraid. He couldn't help it. His breath quickened, and he looked up front at the pilot and thought, here it is again, one pilot and one engine, and if either of them quit, they were going down. If the pilot died, if he died and Derek couldn't fly, there would be nobody up front to control the plane. Brian would have to lunge over him and grab the wheel, try to get his feet to the rudder pedals. He shook his head. Easy now. Easy and easy and easy. Breathe deeply, fight it. Memories of the crash came sweeping back into his mind.
mental pictures of the plane crashing down through the trees and into the water, the blue-green water with the dead pilot next to him suddenly filled his thoughts. He pulled a long breath, held it, and fought the pictures away. After he'd returned home, there'd been dreams. Even after he'd flown again, going to visit his father, there'd been dreams. Not nightmares so much as reliving dreams of the crash and his time in the woods. The time. But now it was different, all different. He looked at the pilot and saw that he was much younger than Jake had been. So young that he had a cassette recorder held with duct tape to the dashboard of the plane and was listening to rock music with a small set of headsets, his chin bobbing with the music. He flew loosely, slouched in the seat, his fingers lightly on the wheel. And something about him, the way he sat and moved with the music, relaxed Brian. He eased back in the seat and looked out the window. Down and to the right he saw the amphibious float with the wheels on the side. They would land right on the lake, but the pilot could also take off from solid ground. The floats didn't seem to slow the plane very much, as big as they were, and they skimmed over the trees until the pilot gained enough altitude to make them seem to slow down. Derek was silent, looking out the side window, and Brian realized it was the first time the man had been silent for as long as he'd known and been with him. He had asked endless questions of Brian. He'd read all the stories about Brian's adventure, as he put it, had all the news stories on tape, and seemed to have memorized everything that happened to Brian. "When you ate the choke cherries," he would say, "how long did it take you to get sick?" Or, "Did you notice any changes in the way you went to the bathroom?" "Oh, come on," Brian had said. "No, really, all these things are important. They could save lives." And his face would get serious. "This is really, really important." Brian realized then that Derek truly cared. Until that moment, sitting in the dining room at his house with maps all over the table, until that moment Brian wasn't sure he was still going. He had said he would, thought he would, but he wasn't totally certain until he'd looked at Derek's face and realized that Derek really wanted to help people by learning what Brian knew. So here he was, in a bush plane heading north, and it somehow seemed perfectly logical, perfectly all right. As if going back were the most normal thing in the world. He looked out the window, down past the float on the right. They'd been flying half an hour, and they were already getting over forest. There were still some farms here and there, but less and less of them, even as he watched. When he looked ahead of the plane, through the whirling propeller, he saw the endless trees stretching away to the horizon. With the fear gone, or controlled, something about the forest drew him, and that was a surprise as well. His thinking had changed during the time he was at the lake. It had to, or he would have died. He had to revert, to become part of the woods, an animal. But when he came back, and had been back a time, he started to recitify as he thought of it. He became used to the city again. The first time he went to a mall, he became ill, dizzy with all the movement and noise. And to make himself normal again, he went back to the mall again and again, until finally it didn't bother him. And the woods slipped away. The dreams came less and less, and he began not to think about them. He didn't forget them. He knew he would never forget them. But he didn't think about them as much, and when he did, there wasn't any fondness. He remembered the rough parts, the mosquitoes, tearing at him, clouds of them, the awful, ripping, thick masses of the small monsters trying to bleed him dry. What was it like, his mother had asked him one day when they were sitting in the kitchen. What was the main problem, the worst part of it? And he thought at first of mosquitoes, started to tell her about them, and shook his head. Hunger. Really, she had seemed surprised. I thought it would be the danger, or being alone, or the weather. I don't mean hunger like you're thinking of it, he'd told her. Not just when you miss a meal and feel like eating a little bit, or even if you go a day without eating. I mean where you don't think you're ever going to eat again, don't know if there will ever be more food, an end to food. Where you won't eat, and you won't eat, and then you still won't eat, and finally you still won't eat, and even when you die and are gone, even then there won't be any food. That kind of hunger. The outburst had made his mother sit back and blink, but he meant it. The hunger was the worst, worse than the mosquitoes, worse than any of it. Hunger. He looked out the window again. Only forest below now, forest and lakes and the plane droning. The air was rough, rougher than he remembered from before, but he didn't mind the jolting. They had left the runway in northern New York in the early morning, but climbing had brought them into the bright sun, and it warmed the inside of the plane until it was hot. Brian was wearing a T-shirt and a baseball cap with a picture of a fish on the front. He pulled the brim down and turned away from the sun. As he turned, he saw the equipment in back of the seats. There was enough for a small army, and it bothered him, and he couldn't pin it down, how or why it bothered him. It just felt wrong. Derek had gone over the list with his mother. Food for weeks, tent, a rubber boat, first aid kit, and mosquito repellent, fishing gear, a gun. A gun. Just what we need. Just for emergencies, Derek had explained, in case we need them. We have everything we need. And there it was, he thought. They had everything they needed, and it ruined it all, made the whole trip worthless. It wouldn't be the same. He tapped Derek on the shoulder, and the big man turned in his seat. Too much, Brian yelled over the noise of the engine. What? Too much stuff, Brian pointed over his shoulder at the mound of gear. But Derek misunderstood and nodded and smiled. Great, isn't it? We have everything but the kitchen sink. Brian shrugged. Yeah, great. But it ate at him. What they were going to do proved nothing. They were playing a game, and it struck him that Derek did that. His whole life was that. He knew it was unfair to think of the man that way. He didn't, after all, know him very well. But he acted that way, like it was all a game, and Derek was approaching this whole business that way. Just a game. Football. Soccer. If it didn't work right, they could call time out and eat a good meal, and go swimming, and sail off into the sunset in the rubber boat, shooting things with the gun and talking to people on the radio. Survival. Right. The plane seemed to hang in the sky over the woods, the trees green like a carpet, out and out, and Brian sat there and watched them without seeing them and thought that it was wrong. It was too much. It was all wrong. He slept. He couldn't believe it, but he slept. The sound of the plane's engine and the warm sun and the sameness of the green forest all combined to hit him like a hammer, and his face went against the window and he slept. The sound of the plane engine, changing sound, decreasing in pitch, awakened him, and he was embarrassed to see that he had drooled in his sleep. He wiped his chin. They were going down. Brian felt himself stiffen when the plane nosed down. He couldn't help it, but the descent was gradual and controlled and even. When they were still well above the forest, the pilot slowed the plane still further and dropped the flaps. The plane almost seemed to stop in the air, floated on down toward the lake below and to the front, and Brian remembered the last time he'd landed on a lake in a bush plane. If he'd known about flaps or how to use them, he wouldn't have been going half the speed when he hit the water. With a gentle landing, he might have had time to help the pilot, get the survival pack out. He watched the pilot carefully, noted everything he did, and realized how lucky he'd been. The pilot flared the plane out so that when it came down to the lake, it seemed to be barely moving. He worked the wheel and rudder pedals to make it float down slowly and easily. Brian had more or less arrowed the plane into the water, through the trees and down, and it was a miracle that he hadn't been killed. The answer to his problem had come to him while he slept. It was simple. The pilot was all business now, his hands working the controls, easing the throttle, settling the plane the last bit down to the lake. But Derek turned and smiled at Brian. Pretty, isn't it? And the lake was pretty. It was almost perfectly round, pushing out toward an egg shape slightly, but only slightly. At the bottom edge of the lake and off to the right, a short distance, a river flowed south and east, and it was amazing to Brian how accurate the map had been. They had gone over it on the dining room table, showing his mother where they would be, but looking down on it now, it seemed to be almost a model made of the map. The blue of the lake matched the blue of the water on the map, and the river cutting southeast through the green forest looked just as it had on the map, delicate, winding. Derek said something to the pilot. Brian couldn't hear over the sound of the engine, and the pilot nodded and banked the plane to the right, more toward the river, and put it softly onto the lake. There was absolutely no wind, and the water was as smooth as a mirror. Brian watched out of his window as the float came down, saw its reflection in the water, closer, closer, until it touched itself and skimmed across the flatness, settling more and more until the plane slowed nearly to a stop. The pilot headed the plane toward a clearing to the right of where the river left the lake, nudging the throttle now and then to keep it moving on the floats, until it at last slid through some green reeds and bumped the shoreline. He cut the engine. "We're here," Derek said, his voice loud in the sudden silence. "Let's get unloaded." He turned and Brian could see that he was excited. Like a kid, he thought. He's as excited as a kid. I'm the kid here, and I'm not excited. That's because he doesn't know. I know, and he doesn't. Derek climbed out onto the float, moving a little stiffly, and Brian noted that he wasn't very athletic, seemed not to be too coordinated, and stepped ashore. The pilot stayed in his seat, and Brian moved the passenger seat forward and clambered out of the plane, stepped on the float and then to the dry grass. Neat, he thought. Neat and clean. The thought came into his mind that it was a beautiful day. The sun was out, there were small popcorn clouds moving across the sky. It was a soft summer afternoon. Then, instantly, in just that part of a second, he changed. Completely. He became suddenly what he'd been before at the lake. Part of it. All of it. Inside all of it, so that every single little thing became important. He didn't just hear birds singing. Not just a background sound of birds, but each bird. He listened to each bird, located it, knew where it was by the sound, listened for the sound of alarm. He didn't just see clouds, but light clouds, scout clouds that came before the heavier clouds that could mean rain and maybe wind. The clouds were coming out of the northwest, and that meant that weather would come with them. Not could, but would. There would be rain. Tonight, late, there would be rain. His eyes swept the clearing, then up the edge of the clearing, and in those two sweeps, he knew. He knew the clearing in the woods. There was a stump there that probably held grubs. Hardwood there for a bow, and willows there for arrows. A game trail, probably deer, moving off to the left meant other things. Porcupines, raccoons, bear, wolves, moose, skunk would be moving on the trail and into the clearing. He flared his nostrils, smelled the air. Pulled the air along the sides of his tongue in a hissing sound and tasted it, but there was nothing. Just summer smells. The tang of pines, soft air, some mustiness from rotting vegetation. No animals. At least nothing fresh. Derek had seen the change, was staring at him. What happened? Brian shook his head. Nothing? Yes, something did. You changed completely. You're not the same person. Brian shrugged. I was just looking at things, seeing them. Tell me, Derek said. He took a notebook out of his pocket. Tell me everything you saw. Right now? Yes. Shouldn't we let the pilot go first? Derek turned as if seeing the plane for the first time. Oh, yes, I almost forgot. He has to get back. Let's unload, and then he can go, and you can tell me. No. What? Brian had made the decision just as he dozed off in the plane and it had settled into his mind while he slept. He knew it was the right thing to do. We're not going to unload. What are you talking about? Brian looked at the lake, the clearing, the clouds. 7-8 hours to rain. I mean, if we unload all that gear, everything but the kitchen sink, like you said, this whole business will be ruined, wasted. I don't see what you mean. What happens if we have trouble? Brian nodded. That's it, exactly. We have trouble. That's what this is all about. You want to learn, but if you have all that backup, it's just more games. It's not real. You wouldn't have that if the situation were real, would you? But we don't have to use it. We don't have to use any of it. Brian smiled, a small, almost sad smile. I promise you, absolutely promise you, that if that stuff is here, you'll use it and I will use it. By the third day, when the hunger really starts to work, and the mosquitoes keep coming and coming, and there isn't any food or a tent, and we know it's just there, just in the bag, I guarantee you we will use it. We won't be able not to use it. So much talk, Brian thought. Just jabber. Jabber all the time. Like blue jays, we stand here and talk, and in 7-8 hours it will rain, and we don't have shelter or dry wood or a fire going. Talk. Leave it all in the plane. Leave it or I'm flying out of here right now. I know what's coming, and I don't want to waste it. But we told your mother. Brian hesitated, then sighed. I know, but the rule still holds. If we unload, I'm going home, period. I'll take responsibility. Derek studied him. You mean it? Absolutely. How about a compromise? What do you mean? We keep the radio in case there's trouble, serious trouble. Then at least we can call for help. Brian rubbed his neck, thinking. It wouldn't be the same. Even the radio would taint it. Still, he had told his mother not to worry, and if he insisted on not using the radio, absolutely not using it. All right. Derek nodded and stepped past him, balanced along the float and reached into the plane. He said something to the pilot, who nodded and looked at Brian through the windshield with a strange look, a studying look. Then he smiled and waved through the plastic, and Brian nodded and waved in return. Derek came back ashore with the radio, a small unit with a weatherproof seal and fresh NICAD batteries. He also carried a small plastic briefcase. "For my papers," he said. "I have to take notes, write things down." Brian nodded, smiling inside. Derek sounded almost like Brian sounded when he was speaking to his mother or father and wanted to do something. Pleading. "For my papers." It was a strange feeling for Brian, the role reversal with an adult. He was in charge of an adult, and he supposed in this situation it was the best way. But he was uncomfortable with it, the business of being in control over an adult, or anybody for that matter. The plane had to be turned. It was nosed into the reeds, and the pilot opened the window and asked them to aim the plane around so it could taxi out and take off. Derek and Brian worked it back and around, wading in the water, pushing at the floats. The water felt warm to Brian, shore warm, and when they had it aimed well out, the pilot started the engine. He taxied away without looking back, and as soon as he was clear of the reeds, he gunned the engine, increasing speed until the plane was roaring across the lake. It bounced once, then again, and was airborne. Climbed well over the trees at the end of the lake, circled and came back over them, the pilot wagging the wings as they watched, and then it was gone. Gone. "Well," Derek said, "here we are, alone." Brian nodded. He felt a strange loss at watching the plane leave, an emptiness. "What's next?" Derek asked. "How do we get the ball in play?" Brian looked at him. "A game. It's all a game." "A fire. We need a fire and shelter. Soon." Derek looked at him, a question in his eyes. Brian looked at the sky. "It's warm afternoon now, but with evening the mosquitoes will come and we need smoke to keep them away until coolness in the morning. And we need shelter because it's going to rain in about 6.5 hours. 6.5 hours? "Sure, can't you smell it?" Derek took a breath through his nose, shook his head. "Nope, not a thing." "You will," Brian said. "You will. Now let's get the ball rolling." And he set off, looking for a firestone. That first night, Brian decided he was insane to have come back, insane to have agreed to do it, and insane for sending the plane away with all that wonderful equipment, especially the tent. Brian had allowed them to have almost no survival gear. He decided that not all people put in this position would have a hatchet, so even that old friend was left at home. He and Derek each had a knife, the kind that folds like a pocket knife but is bigger and is worn on the belt in a leather case. Other than that, they had what was in their pockets, some change, a few dollars in paper money. Derek had a large nail clipper and some credit cards. Brian had pictures of his mother and Deborah in his wallet. "That's it," Derek had said early in the evening while the sun was still on them but low in the west past the tops of the trees at the edge of the clearing. "That's it," Brian had nodded. "It's not much, is it?" Brian had said nothing. The truth was it wasn't much, especially for two people. They would need twice as much of everything. Twice as much food, a larger shelter. It changed things. All Brian had needed to worry about before, during the time, was himself. And that had been bad enough. The thought of the second person, especially one as green as Derek, had not somehow hit him until just then, in late afternoon. And then it didn't matter. The plane was gone. Things began to disintegrate fast after that. It was one thing Brian knew to have a plan, to want to do things. It was something else to actually get them done. Brian could not find a firestone, so there was no fire. Without fire, there could be no smoke. And without smoke, they had no protection against the mosquitoes. They came with first dark, and they were as bad as Brian had remembered, thick clouds of them whining, filling their eyes and ears and nostrils. They had made a crude lean-to. Brian missed the overhanging rock with his shelter back inside a great deal. Clearly it would not stop the rain, though they had tried to make rough shingles of old pieces of half-rotted bark, yet it was a start. But for some reason, some protective thought, they had crawled back into the lean-to when the mosquitoes first came. As if, Brian thought, they could hide from the little monsters. "God," Derek said in a whisper, a tight sound in the darkness back in the lean-to. This is insane. They were sitting with their jackets pulled over their heads, but due to Derek's size, when he pulled the jacket up, it pulled his shirt up from his waist and exposed a bit of skin there. And when the mosquitoes found that, he pulled the shirt down and it exposed his neck. And when he hunched to cover that, they could get his waist again. And in a small time, he was jerking up and down like a yo-yo. You must settle, Brian told him. In your mind. There are some fights you can't win, and I think this must be one of them. It will get worse and worse until after the middle of the night when the coolness comes and the mosquitoes will stop, or at least a lot of them will. And just the words had helped, had calmed Derek and himself as well. Dozing, listening to the whine of them around his head in the dark as they tried to find a way through the jacket, he thought, it was the way. It was the way of things here. The mosquitoes and the night and the coolness that he knew was coming were just the way of it, part of being here. And he thought he should tell Derek, but decided to keep his mouth shut. Derek would find it for himself, or he would not, just as Brian had found things out for himself. Brian left the lean-to and went back outside. There might be part of a breeze later as the rain came, and it would help. There was a sliver of moon, which made enough light to see the lake well, the flat water with the beam of moonlight coming across it, and even with the mosquitoes still working at him, he was amazed at the beauty. There were night sounds, birds, flittering things he knew were bats. He also knew they were eating mosquitoes. He'd read about them in biology and he thought, get some, bats. Get some. Get all the mosquitoes there are. Something swam into the moonlight on the surface of the lake, either a muskrat or a beaver, and cut a V right up the path of the moon, seemed to be heading for the moon, into the moon itself. Water made sound, and he realized it was the river gurgling as it left the lake to his right. Not fast and not wide, perhaps 40 or 50 feet across, the river still seemed to possess force, strength as it ran. Somehow the beauty overrode the mosquitoes. Brian was standing there, looking through the gap in his jacket, which was still pulled up over his head, when he heard Derek come up alongside him. It's incredible, isn't it? Derek saw it as well, the beauty, and Brian was glad that he could see it, see not just the bad parts, but the good as well. I'd forgotten, Brian said. I had dreams after I got out last time. Not all nightmares, but dreams. I would dream of this, of how pretty it was, how it could stop your breath with it, and then I'd wake up in my room with the traffic sounds and the streetlights outside, and I would feel bad, miss it. I would miss this. Except for the mosquitoes. Brian smiled. Well, yes, except for those. But even as they talked, the night temperature started to drop, and it was as if a switch went off. There were still some mosquitoes, but most of them left, and the two of them were left standing in the moonlight. Incredible, Derek said. They're just gone. Haven't you run into them before? You know, when you're doing the courses and all that for the government? Derek nodded. Of course, sort of. I haven't run the courses that much. Just once to try to see what it was like, and I pretty much failed it. They always have tents and repellent and gear with them. You know, to take the edge off. He laughed softly. I'll change that the next time we have a meeting. It was wrong, psychologically wrong. You were right to leave all that in the plane, absolutely right. Later, when everything changed and he did not think there was hope, that statement was all that kept Brian going. The rain came about 11. Derek had time for one quick joke. You said it would be 6.5 hours. It's almost 7. Then it hit them, and there was nothing but water. The clouds had come quickly, covering the stars and moon in what seemed like minutes, and then just opened up and dropped everything on them. It wasn't just a rain. It was a roaring, ripping downpour of water that almost drove them into the ground. They had moved back into the lean-to to try to get some rest since the mosquitoes partially lessened, but the temporary roof did nothing, absolutely nothing, to slow the water. They were immediately soaked, then more soaked, sloppy with water. They tried moving beneath some overhanging thick willows and birch near the edge of the lake, but the trees also did nothing to slow the downpour, and finally they just sat, huddled beneath the willows, and took it. I have, Brian thought, always been wet. Always. Even my soul is wet. He felt the water running down his back. He judged it to be about the same rate as the faucet in his kitchen sink at home, and that made him think of his mother, sitting at the table, the dining room table, with a roof. He'd forgotten how nice a roof could be. This is crazy, he said aloud to Derek next to him, but the rain took the words away and he leaned against a birch and closed his eyes and finally took it. I'm here, he thought, to show Derek how I did it, how this can be done for other people, and right now there's nothing to do but take it. And somehow the night passed. Close to dawn, the rain stopped and there was a softness after the rain, almost a warmth, and that brought the mosquitoes back for one more run. By the time the sun came up, full up over the lake and brought them warmth, Brian felt like he'd been hit by a truck while playing in a puddle. He ached all over, and when he turned to see Derek, leaned back against a tree sideways, curled into a ball with his jacket still over his head, Brian laughed. The sound awakened Derek, who was not really asleep, and he looked out of the jacket. What's so funny? Brian shook his head. I guess it's not funny, but you look so miserable. You ought to see yourself, Derek grinned, kind of like a drowned rat. That's about how I feel. They stood, and Brian moved down to the shore of the lake. He stripped his clothes down to his shorts and wrung them out and hung them on some branches to dry. This day, he thought, this day we must find shelter and a firestone and get a fire going and some food. Hunger was already there. Not the kind it would come later, the cutting kind he remembered so well and that still made his mouth water when he walked past a grocery store or fast food place. But it was there. We have a problem, Derek said suddenly. He had moved down to the lake shore as well and had stripped down to hang his clothes to dry. That's for sure, Brian said. We've definitely got a problem. No, not what we're doing here. I mean, we have a problem with you. What do you mean? You're so quiet. I mean, I see you looking at things and thinking, but I don't know what you're thinking about or what you're working out. I have to know all this to write about it, to tell people what to do. Brian nodded. I understand. It's just that the last time I did this, I was alone. I would have killed, Brian thought suddenly, for someone to talk to, someone to share it with, someone to hear me. And now that I have someone, I don't talk. It's kind of strange having someone here with me. Derek nodded. That's what I mean. You have to tell me everything, externalize it all for me so I can write it. Derek moved back to the lean-to where he'd left the radio and his weatherproof briefcase. Inside the briefcase he had notebooks, each one in a plastic bag, and he took one out now with a pencil and began to write carefully. When he'd written something, he looked up at Brian, waiting. All right, I'm ready. Externalize, Brian thought. How do you externalize? Well, I'm thinking now that we should make sure we get a shelter today, and then get a fire today, and get some food today. I sound like a catalog, he thought, like I'm reading a telephone book. But Derek nodded and started writing, and Brian thought of what he really wanted to say. We should grab the radio and call for the plane and go home and eat a hamburger and a malt, maybe 8 or 10 Cokes, a steak, some roasts, and pork chops. He shook his head. There, Derek said. What were you thinking there? Brian stared at him, then shook his head. You don't want to know. Just junk. He walked away into the day. It was enough. Enough of talk, enough of externalizing. Another night like last night would kill him. He left his clothes to dry, but wore his tennis shoes and noticed that Derek did the same thing, although he carried the notebook as well, and Brian set off along the lake shore to the left. Rule one, he thought. Don't leave the lake shore or you'll get lost. Then he remembered Derek and said it aloud. Thank you, Derek said rather properly. Standing in his underwear, holding the notebook, he looked like somebody out of an old funny movie, and Brian had trouble keeping a straight face. That's exactly what I meant by externalizing. We're looking for a firestone, a shelter, and food all at once. Always, always you look for food. There, up along the edge of the clearing, you see those stumps? Derek nodded. Those will be a good bet for grubworms later. Grubworms? Sure, bears eat them, love to eat them. I can't eat them yet, but by about the third day, if we don't find something else or get some fish, they'll probably be looking pretty good. Grubworms? Brian smiled. I thought you did this survival thing once before. Oh, we ate lizards and snakes and stuff like that. They always have the course in the desert, or did until now. I think it will change. And you always read about people eating ants and grasshoppers, but I never ate a grubworm. You don't chew them, Brian said. I think that would be too much. Just to chew one up, guts and all, they're too soft and, well, just too soft. But if you wrap them in leaves and swallow them whole...
Right, Derek nodded and wrote in the notebook. Grubworms.
Brian stopped and turned to Derek. Food is everything.
What do you mean?
Just that. Out here in nature, in the world, food is everything. All the other parts of what we are, what everything is, don't matter without food. I read somewhere that all of what man is, everything man has always been or will be, all the thoughts and dreams and sex and hate and every little and big thing is dependent on 6 inches of topsoil and rain when you need it to make a crop grow. Food.
You sound like you've thought this out.
That's all I did. Think of food. You watch other animals, birds, fish, even down to ants. They spend all their time working at food, getting something to eat,